Welcome to American Indian Living, a program developed by the Native Education and Health Initiative to improve and enhance the health of people throughout the Native communities. American Indian Living is hosted by Dr. David DeRose, a board-certified specialist in both internal medicine and preventive medicine. Dr. DeRose has a wide range of experience with Native health issues, and he's ready today to help you learn more about your health. Here's Dr. DeRose.
Welcome to American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. Today we're speaking about a subject that is, again, no discriminator of any cultural group. We're speaking, of course, especially to issues in Indian country, but we're dealing with a topic today that affects everyone. It has to do with foot health. And, of course, in Indian country, a big issue when it comes to foot health, like that of other segments of the North American population, has to do with diabetes and some of the very serious foot complications that can often go along with that disease process. But whether or not you have diabetes or other predisposing factors to foot problems, every single one of us has concerns throughout our lifespan in some shape or fashion about our feet, whether it's the result of an injury, whether there's some chronic problems. And today we're going to take a very careful look at some of the things that can go wrong and some of the things that can go right, things that you can do to optimize the health of your feet. To aid us in this very important dialogue is someone who's no stranger to foot health. It's Dr. Maureen Jennings. Dr. Jennings has been working in the area of foot medicine as a podiatrist for over 20 years. She's published in the podiatry literature. She's the executive director of the Jennings Institute for Clinical Research, and it's just wonderful to have you with us today, Dr. Jennings.
Well, thank you, Dr. DeRose. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, Maureen, regardless of what time of year, whether it's the summer months, whether it's the fall, whether it's the winter, people have foot issues. And our shows, even though they air typically in certain blocks, I mean, stations that carry this, whether it's Life Talk Radio or Native Voice One, it's on the Internet, people are going to be listening to this show regardless of what the season of the year is. And I think a lot of times people think of foot health in the summer months when their feet may be visible to people, or if they're in a warmer climate, they may be wearing sandals or barefooted on the beach year round. But foot health is not just about appearance, is it?
No, it isn't, because I'd like to call foot health our understanding, because feet are our understanding. Mm-hmm. And in my experience, I find that when the foot hurts or there's a problem with the foot, because walking is such an important aspect of our lives, it becomes more than just how the feet look or a cosmetic appearance, but it becomes a true health issue in taking care of our feet.
This is so important, and I appreciate you mentioning it. Throughout Indian country, as well as throughout North America as a whole and beyond, there's a huge amount of public health attention being directed toward diabetes. And as a physician and you as a podiatrist, we've seen so many people who come into our offices with often severe foot problems as a result of blood sugar disorder. Can you share with us, your perspective as a podiatrist? I mean, when it comes to diabetes in the foot, what should we know?
That's an excellent question. And as a podiatrist, I have made it my position to have a very strong interactive relationship with my diabetic patients. And the reason for that is I like to explain to my patients that when a diabetic, basically what diabetes is, as we all know, is that it's extra sugar in our blood. And sugar is the fuel for the body. Just like you have gasoline for the car, sugar is the fuel for the body. And what happens, particularly in the places of our body where we have a lot of tiny blood vessels, is that sugar hanging out in the blood tends to back up everything. And the three places that we worry about with diabetics are the eyes, because there's a lot of tiny blood vessels. It takes a lot of energy to focus and to go in and out of light and for the eyes to work properly. And the kidneys, because the kidneys are the filter of our body, and they work constantly filtering out our blood. And, of course, my favorite part, which is the foot, because the foot has a tremendous amount of nerve endings on it, because walking is a complicated, it's not something that we consciously think of, but it's a very complicated process. And so the foot is very well supplied by nerve endings, and all of these nerve endings require a blood supply for health. So when there's excess sugar in the blood, that sugar bottlenecks things, and it tends to wreak havoc on those particular parts of the body. And being in podiatry for over 20 years, I've seen what diabetes can do to the foot.
I think one of the interesting things that you and I have seen so often in clinical practice is people with diabetes, they often are unaware of any complications until they start having neuropathy or nerve changes in the feet. In my experience, it typically starts in the tips of the toes. And people, you know, at first they may not be all that concerned. It may be a funny sensation. But is this something that people should be very concerned about, Maureen?
Absolutely. And I think, David, you've hit the nail on the head with this particular issue. I have seen it in my office where patients have come in, sat down in my exam chair, take off their shoes and socks, and they will have a gaping wound on the bottom of their foot.
Whoa.
And be totally unaware of it because they've lost their feeling, their sensation in the foot. And that becomes a critical issue. Because along with a decrease in sensation, the diabetic is also what we call immunocompromised, which means, as you know, that they are not able to fight off an infection the way a non-diabetic is able to do that. So education is the key to keeping the foot attached to the rest of the body and all of the toes so that the foot can function as it is meant to function. And by education, I mean there are certain things that the diabetic should absolutely, positively be aware of in terms of, I like to tell them, daily foot inspections to look at their feet. Or if they're not able to look at their feet, to have someone, a family member, look at their feet on a daily basis to make sure that nothing has changed on the bottom of the foot and there aren't any cuts and you haven't stepped on anything or anything of that nature, because that can be the start of a cascade of events that can be very damaging to the diabetic foot.
So someone has diabetes, they're feeling fine, but they notice their sensation in their foot is not as good as it used to be. You're recommending, you know, to check the feet every day, and, you know, a lot of individuals with diabetes, they may be carrying some extra weight. It may be hard to get that leg up and actually look down there. They may have trouble using a mirror. So they've got a family member looking, and one day the family member says, well, you know, it looks like you got a little blister or something there. It doesn't look too serious, or a little cut. When there is something that's changed, is that a red flag, or is it just, you know, watch out for it and don't get too alarmed? I mean, what do you recommend as a foot care specialist?
I recommend, if you see a change, to address it as soon as possible. And the reason for that is because it can really tumble down and very quickly in a diabetic. And it can go from simply a little blister to an infection, to then an ulcer. And all kinds of different changes can happen relatively rapidly. And I don't like to scare people, but I certainly want them to be well aware of what they should be looking for. When I first see a diabetic in my office, David, I start off with the most important thing. The most important thing for the diabetic is to keep their sugar under control.
Exactly.
That is
exactly
the start of everything. And I have a long discussion with them explaining how important it is to keep that sugar from piling up in the blood and then wreaking the havoc that it does on those on the foot. So that's the very first thing I emphasize. The next thing I emphasize is there are certain things concerning the foot that a diabetic should never do. And one of them is they should never stick their feet or have their feet exposed to extremes of temperatures. Either a very hot, for example, if you wanted to check the shower, if you wanted to check a bath, you don't stick your foot into that. you basically what I try to tell them, and it's kind of difficult for people to do this, but you should check it with your elbow in actuality and not stick your foot into it. Because the reason for that, David, is if you are, if the water is very hot and you do scald the foot, the skin can break down very easily because the ability, the autonomic nervous system is also very, very much affected. The nervous system is so affected by the diabetic increase in sugar that you need to make sure that you don't expose this foot to any extreme temperature. So that would also be frostbite and the cold. So I go through a whole process of telling the patient, don't stick your foot into the water. Use tepid water. Don't use hot water. Don't expose your foot to heating. For example, I know there are a lot of my patients who will, if they're cold and it's cold outside and their feet are cold, they will put their feet close to the heat. It's not a good idea. Again, the skin is delicate, and you don't want that skin to break down and cause any ulcers or any infections. So, because the skin is the barrier between our outside and our inside, so you need to keep that intact. So I tell them, if you're cold during the winter months, put an extra pair of socks on, wrap it up in an extra blanket, put an afghan around it. Don't expose the foot to extreme temperatures because you increase the possibility of that skin breaking down. I also tell them to do an inspection of their shoes because oftentimes, and proper fitting shoes is another thing that's very important, but the shoes that you have, the slippers that you have, diabetics should never walk around barefoot, ever, because there are things that you can get in your rugs and your floors on the ground, and if you get it embedded into the foot, again, that can cause another cascade of those problems. So you need to make sure that there's no rocks or no pieces of glass and little tiny things that can get in. You need to inspect your slippers and make sure that they and your shoes don't have anything that could cause a problem.
You know, I guess one of the things, Dr. Jennings, that often comes up, someone's newly diagnosed with diabetes, and they say, look, I've not had foot problems. I haven't had to check my shoes. I mean, if there's something in my shoe, I feel it. It bothers me. And early on, as we've been talking, it is possible, we often see this, that people have diabetic complications like nerve problems, loss of sensation in the feet, for example, before they've been diagnosed. That's oftentimes what leads to the diagnosis. But other people, they have just seen a doctor. The doctor says, well, you've got diabetes, but their foot sensation is fine. Are we in danger of giving this message and people saying, oh, well, this is just, you know, a bunch of doctors talking and they're telling everyone to do this, but I don't really need to do it because I can feel if there's a problem in my shoes. I can walk around barefoot because if I step on something, I'll know it. Is that a reasonable approach, or do you see some danger in that attitude?
I do see some danger in that, Dr. DeRose, because diabetes is a very, it sort of creeps up on you, and people often think because they're either taking their insulin or taking their pill to treat the diabetes, that that's all that they have to do. But it doesn't work that way. It's because diabetes is also affecting, everything is affected by the increase in sugar. You have a problem with working with fat and your protein and all of your diet and all of that. So it sort of creeps up on you. And although you may feel that you are in perfect health and your foot is in perfect health and you're feeling everything, it has a way of slowly eating away and taking and having a negative impact on the nerve. And so it may not be something that comes on like in a very quick way. It may be something that sort of creeps up. And with that, I think you should just be aware and take precautions, because I always side, David, on the side of caution.
I always feel this is very wise.
The best way to approach.
We're talking with Dr. Maureen Jennings. She is a podiatrist, has a wealth of clinical experience behind her. She's also a researcher. She actually runs her own research center, and we've got a lot more to come. Whether you have diabetes or not, foot health is extremely important. Do you have foot infections, fungus, athlete's foot, toenail problems? All these things are coming up on today's edition of American Indian Living. Don't go away.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
Today's American Indian Living Radio program is sponsored in part by the Native Education and Health Initiative, also known as NAHI, a nonprofit organization established by Native Americans for Native Americans. In addition to sponsoring American Indian Living, NAHI produces a health publication and has initiated a series of programs to combat diabetes. Further information about NAHI is available at nahicharity.org. The Lifestyle Center of America is another American Indian Living sponsor. Located in South Central Oklahoma, the Lifestyle Center provides a variety of health services in Indian country, including residential diabetes treatment programs and their Wellspring DVD series, a prepackaged diabetes program suitable for home, workplace, or community center used by people of all races. Further information about the center is available at lifestylecenter.org or by phone at 1-800-596-5480.
Some important social statements by United States citizens today on policy.
To be a good American, you've got to like people, share things, and not scream at people. And you should also help them, and then you can share at them.
A statement on historical tradition and our form of government.
I love America because it got government full of people, and full of people. For the people.
A statement on down-to-earth American idealism.
I like living in America because it means freedom. It means that you can do most stuff you want as long as it doesn't, like, hurt anybody and you have to work hard to keep it.
America, a statement in summary.
I love America because everybody's equal. And when you play with other kids and they dunk you, you can dunk them back.
You're listening to a pre-recorded broadcast of American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE, 1-800-775-4673. Here again is your host.
Welcome back to American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. Today we're speaking about foot health. Whether you have diabetes, whether you have circulation problems, whether you have other risk factors for foot problems, whether it's bony abnormalities or things that are putting abnormal stresses in certain parts of your feet. Even if you have perfect feet and you say, why am I even listening to this show? This is something you want to learn about now. You want to prevent problems. That's the message that Dr. Maureen Jennings has been giving us. And Dr. Jennings, we spoke a lot in the first segment about diabetes, a lot about neuropathy, nerve damage, circulation problems, how infections can creep up, and see if I've walked away with the message you were trying to communicate, and that is that individuals with diabetes have to take foot health very seriously. It's got to be part of the daily routine. They need to be checking their feet, and they need to take special precautions not to injure their feet, whether it's walking barefoot, something they shouldn't do, whether it's making sure their shoes are in good shape, no foreign particles, rough edges, whatever in the shoes, not doing things like sticking their feet in hot water or other hot environments. Is that pretty much the bottom line message you want individuals with diabetes to get?
Yes, David. As my father would always say, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And
wow,
so, therefore, if you can prevent some of these extremely negative problems from occurring, then you're way ahead of the game because you need to address these and you need to be aware of it. Education is so important. Aware that your foot is very prone to problems if you are a diabetic and if you don't inspect and take care of them.
Now, Maureen, with you being a podiatrist, you know, having over 20 years of clinical experience, as well as your the research work you've done in this area, one of the questions that people are bound to be asking in their minds is, well, look at, okay, I've got diabetes, I'm checking my feet, do I need to establish a relationship with a podiatrist? Is it sufficient just to be seeing a general doctor for this? What is your take on that?
Well, my take is that most, if you have diabetes and it's under well control, it's well-controlled diabetes, most primary care doctors will say, I think you should just to check everything, see a podiatrist. And so that establishes a relationship, and it becomes a team approach to making sure that all aspects of the diabetic are taken care of, including, most importantly, the sugar control and making sure the feet, the eyes, and all of that are under good control. So I would suggest that even if you are a young, newly diagnosed diabetic, you don't seem to have any of the nerve problems that we were talking about before, the pain in the feet, I would still suggest that you do make an appointment to see a podiatrist just to make sure that, you know, that everything is fine. And if you go to see the podiatrist once a year, that or whatever the case may be, depending upon your need, I would highly recommend that.
Now, you probably wouldn't take exception to this example I'm going to share with you, Dr. Jennings, but just kind of interested in your response. We do have a number of health professionals that listen to the show, and a friend of mine, a primary care physician, used to tell his patients when they see their primary care doctor, because he was, even though he was in primary care, he also had a kind of referral health education practice that dealt a lot with diabetes. He would send people back to their physicians, and he'd say, look, when you go back to your primary care doctor, what I want you to do whenever you have a visit is make sure you take off your shoes and demand that your doctor look at your feet. Do you think that's going a bit overboard, or would you endorse that routine for all the people with diabetes listening to the show today?
I would wholeheartedly endorse that. I find it amazing when my patients go to their primary care doctor or go to the endocrinologist, or the doctor who takes care of their diabetes, and they don't look at their feet. They should absolutely, positively. You know, the more eyes on the foot, the more eyes that are looking at the diabetic overall, the better it is.
Well, you know, Maureen, a huge problem in Indian country, as well as every segment of the American population, is another foot problem that can go along with diabetes, but there are literally millions of people who don't have diabetes who have problems with foot fungus infections. I'm sure you see many, many people with fungal infections of the foot. What kind of wisdom do you have for us there? Because I know people are thinking, well, look, we've got this foot expert. I mean, what am I going to do with this athlete's foot or this toenail fungus or whatever problem the individual has involving the feet and fungus?
Excellent question. And I do have to say, for at least on the East Coast here, this is the season when we start to see a tremendous amount of increase in the incidence of athlete's foot. And basically what athlete's foot is it's a fungal infection of the skin, of the foot. Mm-hmm. And the thing about athlete's foot is that it is very comfortable in the foot because it's a fungus. And fungus like dark, moist, warm places. Mm. So the foot becomes a very happy place for the fungus to be. And with that, it can become a very discomfort, a very embarrassing problem for the patient. And basically what you see with a fungus infection is you will see the itchiness. It gets very itchy. It can get red, blistery, scaling. There sometimes is an odor that comes out of the foot itself. And all of these things really can adversely really affect the quality of your life if you have this kind of an infection. And a lot of times also what will happen is this infection will live quite happily in between your toes. Mm-hmm. And so what we like to do at this season is to educate people on how to prevent getting a fungus infection. And your first
tell
line
us
of
what can we do? Yeah.
Yes, the first line of defense for avoiding an athlete's feet is proper hygiene and regular inspection of the foot. And by proper hygiene, what I mean is that people need to wash, clean, and dry their feet. And this way you'll be able to resist the disease if you keep the area dry and clean. Now, sometimes people think they're in the shower and that's going to take care of washing their feet, having the soapy water go down and through their toes and things of that nature. It doesn't work. You really do need to actually wash your feet with soap and water. And the very important point is to dry, and particularly to dry in between the toes, because that area, the skin in between the toes, is a little softer than the more tough skin that's at the bottom of the foot. So if that, if the fungus, which is all among us, it's all around us, if it tends to get into the in between the toes, it it really does start to make a very happy home. And the places that you have to watch out for that are full of fungus are kids that are going away to a camp, summer camp, will have it. Gym lockers have a tremendous amount of fungus, public showers, even hotel rooms. So you have to be very careful in when you're in these areas in terms of picking up and getting the fungus infection. And so, what I recommend for these places, if you're going to go, if you're at camp or if you're outside a lot or you're in the gym and lockers or any kind of public showers, is that you what I wear what I call shower shoes or water socks. And those are shoes that are particularly made to go into the water. And you can use these when you're in these places to avoid contact with the fungus.
Okay, so basically there's a preventive approach. But, you know, as I'm thinking about this, and I can, you know, reflect on my own childhood, you know, none of the other kids, at least back when I was a kid, were wearing things like this. And I didn't want people staring at me or making fun of me. And so, you know, you say, well, so you get a little infection on your feet. I mean, this can be treated. Is that a proper attitude? Can people say, well, we got good treatments today, I'm not going to worry about it? Or are there some potential dangers and complications to athlete's foot and other foot fungus infections that we need to keep in perspective?
Well, to answer the question in terms of if you do see something that is, indicates that you may have an infection, such as you see some redness, some scaling, some blistering, you start to get itchy in between your toes, you do need to address that as soon as you detect it. And the reason for that is because it can multiply and it can become you start to scratch it. Once you start to scratch it, you're going to spread it. And once it starts to spread, if you scratch it a lot, I've seen it where some patients have come in, David, and their skin is raw from scratching it because it gets very itchy. And where that becomes a real problem is you can get a bacterial infection on top of the fungus infection if you start to break down the barrier of the skin. You also have to be very careful. We go back again to the diabetic, because if their skin is broken and they're in for get an infection, they can't fight it like the non-diabetic. And the same happens with those who have a bad circulation.
Now, we've got a lot more to talk about when it comes to fungus infections, not just affecting the skin, but affecting the nails as well. I'm talking with Dr. Maureen Jennings. We've got a lot of insights about foot health, things that you've been wondering about, best treatments, best prevention strategies. Dr. Maureen Jennings, podiatrist, researcher, she's going to be back with a lot more. I'm Dr. David DeRose. Stay tuned for more on today's edition of American Indian Living.
American Indian Living will continue in a moment. If you have questions or comments about today's pre-recorded broadcast, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673.
America's veterans have served our country in both war and peace.
It's because of people like you that we are free.
My class was learning about war and how hard it is.
I wanted to do something to let them know how I feel.
Now there is a way to thank them for helping keep America free. Log on to thankyouveterans.org and type a personal message of thanks.
Dear Dad, I've recently come to understand how important your service to America was, and I just wanted to say thank you.
There are 26 million veterans living in America today. from World War II to Afghanistan and Iraq.
We carry our experiences inside. It's nice to have someone say thanks.
Let a veteran know you appreciate their service. Log on to thankyouveterans.org, a public service of Paralyzed Veterans of America.
This is the Duchess of York. What's really important in your life? It's your family and your friends. But isn't it also your health? People who are overweight or obese are at a greater risk for illnesses such as cancer. Check your BMI or body mass index. The lower the number, the lower the risk. So lose weight in a healthy way. You'll lower your BMI number. Now, isn't that important? Visit the website of the American Cancer Society at www.cancer.org. You and your family and friends will be glad you did.
Thank you for listening to American Indian Living. If you missed some of the discussion, CD copies of today's show are available. CDs of previous broadcasts are also available. Our email address is AmericanIndianLiving@lifetalk.net. CD requests and comments can also be communicated by phone at 1-800-775-4673. That's 1-800-775-4673. Stay with us for the second half of today's program.
You're listening to a pre-recorded broadcast of American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE, 1-800-775-4673. Here again is your host.
Welcome back to American Indian Living. Dr. David DeRose here. With me today, a very special guest, Dr. Maureen Jennings. Dr. Jennings has been helping people have healthy feet for over 20 years. She's the former dean for research at the New York College of Podiatric Medicine. Even if I can't pronounce it correctly, Maureen, that's still the case. And she actually runs currently her own research institute, the Jennings Institute for Clinical Research. She is the executive director of that. And Maureen, it is just wonderful to be learning from you as far as things we could do to take care of our feet. We've been speaking about a problem in our last segment that seems to be not only no discriminator of ethnicity, whether you're in Indian country listening today or whether you've have very limited contact with First Nation peoples. This is a condition that can affect people across cultural lines, but we've been also talking about certain seasons of the year. I mean, athlete's foot can be bad in the summer months when people's feet are more sweaty and hot, but it can also be a problem when they're putting all those extra pairs of socks on in the winter, like you suggested, right?
Absolutely. It doesn't have a particularly seasonal, one way or the other. It can happen at any point in time. It happens oftentimes with during the winter and the spring and the fall, because of the increase in people attending gyms and going to exercise and or attempting to exercise, and that also helps to bring out the infection as well.
So basically what we learned in the last segment, Dr. Jennings, is I can decrease my risk of getting athlete's foot or other fungus type problems with my feet if I wear some type of maybe plastic shoe or something that I can shower in and go to the pool in, so I'm not walking in places where there's standing water and a lot of foot traffic from other people. Is that a safe summary of one of the key prevention points?
I think that's perfect. The and adding that proper hygiene is also important and
okay,
regular
yes.
inspection as a first line of defense.
So let's say someone doesn't take this advice, or maybe they do and they still notice some itching and redness between their two smallest toes. They spread the toes apart and they see the skin kind of cracking or whatever, or maybe even bleeding, and they say, oh my, I heard Dr. Jennings speaking about this on American Indian Living. I bet I have athlete's foot. And they say, well, Mom always used to use vinegar on Dad's athlete's foot, so I'm going to try some vinegar. Are some of these simple remedies, I've heard of people using, and I'll be honest with you, I've even prescribed things like this tea tree oil. I mean, are these things really have some effectiveness when it comes to treating fungus infections in your experience?
in my experience, there's a lot of different things that can be used for a fungus infection. But what people have to understand is there is a difference between the fungus infection that you get in between your toes and the fungus infection that you get on your nails. They're cousins. They're related, but okay. They're not exactly the same thing. And there's a difference in the way that you you want to treat the fungus infection in your nails versus the fungus infection in between the toes. And in my experience, okay. What I have found is if a patient sees, a person sees a little bit of a redness, there's an itchy, there's a scaling, one of the best approaches is to use a fungoid tincture, which is a product that has an antifungal in it. And that is to, and it's a tincture, so it sticks right onto the skin and helps to clear out the fungus. Versus, if you wanted to look in the nail itself, what I have found for a nail fungus, which is when it gets yellow and discolored, is that some tea tree oil works well in and around the nail, in and on the nail itself. So it's kind of like two different things you want to address in that way.
Uh-huh. You know, I'm glad you brought up the solutions, and I know you do work with fungoids, so you know, we'll let our listeners know that, and it's not because your research institute developed that product, right?
No, my institute did not develop that product, no. This product has been around a very long time.
So basically, you know, you've seen the effectiveness of the tinctures, and you know, fungoid is one of these that's available. I've been interested in this as a physician because, you know, historically most people, they've heard about using these powders and other things, and some people seem to get some relief from the antifungal powders, but it always made a lot more sense once I got educated that a powder is really not the ideal thing to treat something that lives in these warm, moist environments, because that powder can kind of get caked and all, and it seemed like you know, these solutions like you're talking about are a better strategy. Is it just something that makes sense, or is there really some science behind this? Are these really more effective when you use these solutions instead of a powder or a spray?
What the powder does, Dr. DeRose, is it keeps the skin from, it sort of dries things up, as you said, it cakes. So what I, for those people who sweat a lot, they need to use the powder to prevent getting the infection. The powder is used more for a prevention, whereas the fungoid tincture itself is used more when you actually see signs of some fungus infection.
Okay. So you as a podiatrist, someone comes in, maybe they have diabetes, maybe they don't, and their foot has been bothering them, you find that the skin of the foot has athlete's foot. Do you do anything besides tell the person to get a fungoid tincture and use that, or are there some other things that a podiatrist would do right there on the spot?
It depends upon the degree of the infection, and it depends upon where the infection is. There are some presentations where the fungus infection is just extremely, it's all over the foot, it's very debilitating, and that may require something more, a prescription of an antifungal in order to hit that kind of a severity of the infection. Whereas it's something that is not quite as prevalent throughout the entire foot and it's just started, then you can use something more along the fungoid tincture line to be able to keep it from spreading.
Okay. Let's say, Dr. Jennings, someone says, okay, I'm hearing the message there. I think I've got some problems. I don't have diabetes. I don't have a regular doctor. Is this something where someone could treat themselves or could try a treatment if they don't have other risk factors, circulation problems, diabetes, they think, you know, they're hearing the description, they say, maybe this is athlete's foot. I tried some of the powders, they didn't work. Maybe I should get this tincture. Is it something they can get? Does it require a prescription? Where do they get more information about it?
It does not require a prescription. It is sold at local stores. I don't know, you know, like Walgreens, the local pharmacies. And if you need more information, there's a website, www.fungoid.net. So that's that. And this is something, as long as you don't have the risk factors, as you said, this is something that you can get in your own local pharmacy and apply it and see if that works.
Okay, very good. Well, we've talked about diabetes. We've talked about fungus infection in the form of athlete's foot. And, you know, I think it's worth spending a little more time speaking about the nail fungus, because a lot of times people say, well, you know, my nails look bad. You know, they're getting real thick. They're yellowish. Someone may seek treatment for that. But other people say, well, you know what? I'm a guy. I don't care what my toenails look like. Is there a reason to be concerned? I mean, if someone does have, say, diabetes, is a foot nail infection, is that something that could threaten them in any way? Or is it something they can reasonably just say, well, I'm not going to be worried about it?
Well, it's the threat that comes with if you're not with fungal nails is if you're not interested in terms of the cosmetic a problem with the way they look, there is the problem that what happens with the fungus when it gets inside the nail is it tends to make the nail quite thick and what we call dystrophic, thick and brittle and crumbly, and with that thickness comes the potential to get an ingrown toenail, which would mean cutting into the skin and causing an infection. So it is something that should be addressed depending upon the severity of the infection. And what happens with toenail fungus is that it seems to just, it doesn't go away. It's not one of these things that are going to go away. And it seems to get thicker and spread to each one of the other nails as well. And that's where you have to watch and be careful that, again, particularly in the diabetic or those with bad circulation, that this doesn't get too thick and then cause an ingrown toenail, which can cause a bacterial infection on top of an already fungus infection. That's what you have to worry about.
There are many people, though, that are tuning in today, Dr. Jennings, who are very concerned about how their toenails look. And for those individuals, if they came into your office, maybe just one toenail is affected, it may be early on. Is the initial strategy one of these natural preparations? Do you prescribe an oral medication? What kind of advice do you give someone in your office?
Well, you have to look at the patient from head to toe, as I like to say. And the first thing, if a patient is coming in and they have a small amount of a fungal infection in their nail, I usually like to start off with a tea tree oil, a natural approach, a simple approach to trying to nip it in the bud, if you'd like, and try to address that as soon as the patient wants to work on it. If they've had this, a lot of patients, unfortunately, don't come in when it's first started. They come in and the nail is pretty infected, and there's a couple of nails involved. I mean, I would love it if they would come in early, but most will not do that. So what we do at that point is there is a prescription, topical, depending upon the overall health of the patient, and there is also the oral. And the oral, you need to take blood work to make sure the liver is fine, and you need to also do a culture to make sure that it is a fungal infection, because sometimes psoriasis in the nail can look a little bit like a fungus infection. So you got to make sure that that's what you're dealing with. And if the patient is a candidate, then oral seems to be the best, depending upon the severity of the disease.
Now, coming back to the tea tree oil, this, of course, is available over the counter.
How would someone go about applying this, and how would they know if it's even working? Because these fungal infections can take a long time. We're going to see what Dr. Jennings has to say about that. We'll also have some further insights about foot health. Maybe you have foot problems. Maybe the bottom of your feet hurt. You may have been told you have plantar fasciitis, or you may have bunions, other foot issues. Dr. Jennings has a lot more information, although we don't have a lot of time in the show. We've got one more segment coming up. I encourage you not to miss it. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We'll be back with more from Dr. Jennings.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
Today's American Indian Living radio program is sponsored in part by the Lifestyle Center of America. Located in South Central Oklahoma, the Lifestyle Center provides a variety of health services in Indian country, including residential diabetes treatment programs and their Wellspring DVD series, a prepackaged diabetes program suitable for home, workplace, or community center and used by people of all races. Further information about the center is available at lifestylecenter.org or by phone at 800-596-5480. American Indian Living is also sponsored in part by the Native Education and Health Initiative, known as NAHAI, a nonprofit organization established by Native Americans for Native Americans. In addition to sponsoring American Indian Living, NAHAI produces a health publication and has initiated a series of programs to combat diabetes. Further information about NAHAI is available at NAHAICharity.org.
Canned vegetables. Bingo. Hey, Duncan, get over here. Need you to stay with me and your brother, okay? Well, closer. Come on. Help me out here, buddy. Excuse me. Duncan, you're blocking me out.
I want some bologna.
Not today.
But I need water.
Sorry. Duncan! Too bad.
Mommy was at me.
Okay, well, she's not here, okay? She's gone, and she's not coming back, and you're just going to have to deal with it like the rest of us, okay? Duncan.
On May 29th, Michelle Jimenez was killed by a drunk driver. She left behind her husband and four children. Drinking and driving is a crime that kills abruptly, but the pain lasts forever. Friends, don't let friends drive drunk. A message from the U.S. Department of Transportation, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to a pre-recorded broadcast of American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE, 1-800-775-4673. Here again is your host.
Rose here. We're speaking with Dr. Maureen Jennings, a podiatrist with a rich background in research as well as clinical practice. She's been sharing with us insights from both the research field as well as her own treatment of patients over 20 years, a bit more than that, in fact. And Dr. Jennings, we've been speaking about foot health and a variety of perspectives, but one of the other issues that I know you see lots of people walking through your doors dealing with, things that have to do with the structure of the foot, the mechanics of the foot, whether it's heel pain or a diagnosis of plantar fasciitis, maybe it's bunions. I mean, a lot of terms that people may have heard, if they're not affected with it, they're kind of wondering about it. First of all, are there ways that we can prevent foot problems?
In terms of the structure of the foot, one of the most important things that people have to understand about each individual foot, their own particular structure of the foot, and of their own foot. And what I mean by that is that there are shoes that are out there, and not all shoes can be worn by all people comfortably. And it's not always the right choice because it looks good, and you want to look good to wear a shoe that does not fit properly or does not fit your foot. Mm-hmm. And basically, most of the patients that I see tend to go towards having a flat foot, not a high-arched foot, but rather more, I think more people in general, I've been doing this for a long time, tend to have a flatter foot. Mm-hmm. And flat feet do pose a problem in terms of the fact that it's more difficult to pick up the toes as the foot flattens when you step down and as you're walking. Mm. So what you need to keep in mind is that you need to have a good supportive shoe. I always suggest a good tie shoe. I happen to like sneakers, and I often will say to, especially for kids, for young children, and for people who are on their feet a lot, if you get a good sneaker that's supportive, that's light, that's flexible, you don't wear a heavy shoe because that makes it more difficult to pick the foot up. All of these things add to a more comfortable walking lifestyle in terms of wearing the proper shoes.
Speaking about proper shoes, many times women feel compelled, especially if they're, dressing nicely in certain occasions, to wear what is, the high heels, the pointed-toed shoes. Now, fortunately, at powwows and things, many of the Native American listeners wear more traditional footwear that actually seems to be a lot more conducive to foot health. But these pointed-toed shoes, high heels, do they have some particular dangers as far as long-term foot health?
Well, what I have seen with high-heel shoes and pointed toes is, of course, in the front of the foot, if you have a pointed toe, your toes are all crumbled together, and it just has to be that way. There's just no room, so they're going to be crumbled together. And over long term of use, that can produce things such as corns and calluses and all kinds of problems because the feet are just so pushed in. And what often happens with heels is that the higher the heel, you have to have a very stable ankle to be able to walk in those high-heeled shoes. Mm. So what I will do with my patients, if they're having problems in terms of pains with bunions, which is when the big toe is pushed over and it's sticking out of the side of the shoe, or hammer toes when the toes are up in the air, is try to get the patient to go into a more a lower heel, a more stacked heel, not a thin heel, so it gives a little bit more stability and more room in the front of the shoe. I mean, the three things you want to look for in a shoe when you go to purchase a shoe, no matter what kind of a shoe, whether it's a dress shoe or a work shoe, is you don't want it to be a heavy, you want it to be a light shoe. You want it to have flexibility, meaning that you should be able to take the front of the shoe and push it up towards the back of the shoe. It should be flexible. And the third thing that's very important for proper fitting shoes is that the counter, which is the back of the shoe, the heel of the shoe, not the heel itself, but the back part of the shoe, it should be a little stiff. So to give you, so that when you're picking your toes up, David, the shoe easily comes with you. You're not straining in order to pick the shoe up.
Okay, so proper footwear, extremely important. A lot of podiatrists seem to recommend that their patients get some type of insert, or often called an orthotic. Is this something that that most people benefit from, or only when they start having foot problems? Is that a consideration? Is that something that ever is prescribed preventively?
In my experience, we usually don't prescribe these preventively. And the reason for that is because most people don't come to your office for preventive foot care. they come because they have a problem. And so then you deal with it by taking care of the particular problem. And with orthotics, they work wonderfully in terms of heel pain, the plantar fasciitis that you were talking about, bunion pain, pain in general. An orthotic that is made specifically for your foot can really be helpful.
Now, these things are expensive. A tribal health program may cover it. It may not. Someone may have access to a good clinic that's just covering all these needs. But even if there is a tribal program, there may not be someone who's able to actually prescribe the orthotic and have the product made. So many people say, well, it's just an insole. I mean, I can go down to the athletic store and just buy one of these. Is that sometimes going to give some help, or is there? We're talking about two different products completely.
No, we're not talking about two different products completely. We're talking about one being made specifically for you. And what I tend to do with patients that don't have health insurance and they don't have, you know, the ability to pay for, because these are expensive, and the reason they're expensive is because it's so many, it's an involved process in having these made. What I would do is I will tell them, go to your local store and get an insert, and there are some sports inserts that are made that are nice and cushiony, and bring it back to me, and I'll put a little extra padding on wherever your problem may be, if it's around the bunion, if it's underneath the heel, and we'll make it a little bit more towards your for you. And what generally happens with that is that these will wear out over time, whereas an orthotic you have for a long time. These will wear out, and then you need to replace them, and that's generally the way I deal with those people that don't have access to health insurance or don't have the ability to pay for them.
Well, that's a great idea. So someone listening to today's show who's having foot pain, they've got an appointment to see a podiatrist, it may not even be a bad idea to come with a couple of these inserts and bring those along, or that be being a little bit too forward as far as trying to move along a little too quickly?
Well, that's a good question. For me, I would invite that because, it really is something that you know will help them and make them more comfortable, and that's my job, and that's what I love to do. So to me, it would be very inviting to have them come in, and because it just makes it easier because you can deal with it right then and there and help them so that they walk out feeling better than they walked in to your office.
Mm-hmm. Now, in your experience, if someone is choosing something, whether they're seeing a podiatrist or not, and they want to get some kind of insole, are there certain brands that are better than others, or is that something you generally shy away from recommending?
No, there's actually a company called Spenco, S-P-E-N-C-O, and they tend to make a nice cushiony insert, and you will find those in athletics, you know, like different places that sell athletics, that sell sneakers. You will find them in that. But I've also had patients come in with, even a Dr. Scholl's, coming in where they get it in their supermarket, because there's foot sections for treatment of the feet in supermarkets, and they will come in with those as well. And generally what I tend to tell people is that to get a full length all the way from the heel to the toe, so that whatever needs to be done, the podiatrist can make the adjustments on that and make it as form-fitting to the individual patient as well. There's also, podiatrists can also order some over-the-counter inserts for the patient as well.
Very good. Dr. Jennings, you've helped us cover so much ground today, given us such excellent information, whether we've got diabetes, fungus infections, whether we've got structural problems with our feet. Some of the things you mentioned today that people may want to pick up in the store are insoles. You mentioned Spenco as one brand. You mentioned a product for athlete's foot. Tell us again about that's available over the counter.
It's a fungoid tincture, and you can find information on www.fungoid.net.
That is Dr. Maureen Jennings, podiatrist, researcher. She's been sharing with us things you can do to keep your feet in tip-top health, even if they are at the bottom of your body. I'm Dr. David DeRose. For all of us at American Indian Living, we hope that today's show has contributed to your total health. Until next time, from all of us, the best of health to you.
Thank you for listening to American Indian Living. We hope today's program has contributed to your living a healthy life. American Indian Living Radio is brought to you by the Native Education and Health Initiative in partnership with the Lifestyle Center of America and Life Talk Radio. American Indian Living is also distributed through the public radio satellite system by American Indian Radio on Satellite, a service of Native American Public Telecommunications.